Good afternoon, everyone. So you have had the opportunity to sit through three amazing presentations on three incredible projects, and I'm going to try to cram even more information into your brain. My name is Ed Tuphorn. I'm the Executive Vice President at the Asian and Pacific Islander American Health Forum, and you'll notice from this title slide that I'm not the primary author for this abstract. So while I am trying to cram information into your brain, if you do ask technical questions that I can't answer, I reserve my right to phone a friend and use one of my lifelines. I have no disclosures to share with you today. And I do want to share with you a little bit about the Asian Pacific Islander American Health Forum. We're one of the nation's largest and oldest national policy and advocacy organizations, and much like the Heckler Report, are actually celebrating our 30-year anniversary next year. We have been around the block and back for a while, and some of the things that we've had the opportunity to do as an organization over our 30-year history have been things like working with the Clinton administration to establish the first executive order, which created the White House Initiative on Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders. We also, during the whole national debate on the Affordable Care Act, submitted an amicus brief in support of the ACA. And programmatically, we've done a lot of work in a number of different health issues, including HIV, cancer, healthy eating, active living, various health issues that impact Asian American, Native Hawaiian, and Pacific Islander communities. This is what I've got in store with you for the next 19 minutes. 18 minutes now. What I want to share with you a little bit is this need for a national Asian American, Native Hawaiian, Pacific Islander health equity network. And as Ms. Hunter shared with us, part of the history that's being celebrated here at APHA this year is Secretary Heckler's report on Black and Minority Health. And this was the impetus for my organization, the Asian Pacific Islander American Health Forum. The report was an amazing step forward for our country in raising attention and of the importance of health equity, but one of the things it didn't do was a good job of accurately representing Asian American, Native Hawaiian, Pacific Islander communities. Unfortunately, when it comes to the communities that my organization works with, often we're challenged by an awareness of different health issues that impact our community. We're challenged by surveys that are only conducted in English when one out of three Asian Americans speaks English with limited English proficiency. And we're challenged by survey sample sizes that don't always account for the breadth and diversity of the Asian American, Native Hawaiian, Pacific Islander community. So as a result, and we really want to thank Secretary Heckler for her work on this report, but also the impetus for our community to come together across the country to develop a national organization who could be one of the voices for Asian American, Native Hawaiian, Pacific Islanders and the importance of public health and health equity. Unfortunately, 30 years later, this perception that Asian Americans, Native Hawaiian, Pacific Islanders aren't impacted by health disparities continues. We saw this a couple years ago in a report in 2012, in a report that was issued by Pew, and you can see some of the quotes from the report on the screen. There's this model minority myth that exists in the broader public sometimes, and what that model minority myth speaks to is a misperception that all Asians are very intelligent, are well-educated, are well-to-do, and if you look at the census data in aggregate, that might appear to be true, but the reality is that we are a really diverse community, and when you drill down and disaggregate the numbers, it really reveals a diversity of experiences among Asian Americans, Native Hawaiians, and Pacific Islanders, and only by focusing on the aggregate, then we lose the opportunity to inform resources, to inform policy, to inform programs that are reaching the more vulnerable pool communities within an already diverse community. Even more recently, just 3 weeks ago, how many of you, anyone here from New York reads the New York Times? Raise your hand, perhaps. You may have seen this column by, who was the author of this column? It was Nick Kristoff, who, again, contributed to this perception that the Asian American community is this model minority community. And so he posed the question, why are Asian Americans so successful in America? Does the success of Asian Americans suggest that the age of discrimination is behind us? And this is really problematic on so many different levels. On one hand, it's problematic for Asian American, Native Hawaiian, Pacific Islander communities because it does a disservice to the realities of some of the challenges that our communities faces. But in the context of racial justice and social justice, it does a disservice to all racial ethnic communities because it puts for the notion that the success or lack of success of other racial ethnic communities in comparison to Asian American communities is just that comparison is so disrespectful. And it's important for us working in public health and working across social justice to recognize that putting racial ethnic communities in competition with another in this manner is completely not appropriate. In the work of the Asian American, Asian Pacific Islander American Health Forum, one of the things that we note in our mission is that while we seek to influence policy, to mobilize communities, and to strengthen programs and organizations for the 18 million Asian American, Native Hawaiian, Pacific Islanders who live in the U.S. and U.S.-affiliated Pacific Island jurisdictions, while that work might have a focus on Asian American, Native Hawaiian, Pacific Islander communities, it must be done in solidarity and in partnership with all racial ethnic communities. So just to share with you a little bit of the data that's available to counteract this model minority myth, and again, when you look at the aggregated census data for per capita income, it may seem that Asians are not doing so badly, but when you disaggregate out the data by specific ethnic group, you'll see a whole different tale. Similarly, for education, I realize the type is a little small on the slide, but there's a line down the middle. On the left-hand side of that line, we're looking at data related to less than a high school diploma, and so we want to see a shorter bar there. On the right-hand side, we're seeing bachelor degrees or higher, and so we want to see a longer line. So in this case, looking at both sides of that line, it might seem that Asians, Native Hawaiian Pacific Islanders, are doing fairly well in terms of education. But again, when you disaggregate out the data, those lines have different lengths and look very different for our community. So that's only when you disaggregate out the data. I think for Asian American, Native Hawaiian, Pacific Islanders, in federal reports, in state and local reports, and even in presentations at this conference, we're not always included in the data. Can I just see a show of hands? How many of you have been to at least one session at this conference where the presenter was sharing a table, a chart, a graph on racial ethnic data, but in presenting that data, they made no mention of either Asian American, Native Hawaiian, Pacific Islanders, or for that case, often no mention of American Indians or Alaskan Natives. I know I've been in some sessions. So I ask of you, those in the room, that as you think about the presentations that you're doing, some of the things that we've heard back from presenters, from federal agencies, from state agencies, is the sample size is too small. There's not a huge community. We have to preserve privacy. And yes, those are all very important considerations, but by not even mentioning our communities, you're contributing to that model minority myth and contributing to that misperception that we're not part of the American community and that we're not impacted by health disparities. So even if it's a mention of Asian American, Native Hawaiian, Pacific Islanders with an asterisk that says that the sample cell size is too small, that's better than leaving us invisible. A couple of last pieces in terms of background is to recognize that as a community, we are one of the fastest growing groups when you look at percentage rates, that we're a diverse, politically constructed community that brings together a number of different cultures, a number of different countries, each having very distinct ethnic groups, each speaking very different languages and dialects. And when you look at the health disparities data that is available, we do suffer not only from chronic disease, but also communicable diseases in significant ways, particularly hepatitis and TB when it comes to communicable diseases, cardiovascular disease and diabetes when it comes to chronic diseases. And because 1 in 3 of our community don't speak English or speak English with limited English proficiency, general public health strategies that are only provided in English or that target the general population may not necessarily reach our community. So moving on to this piece around social network analysis, what exactly is social network analysis? I like to think of it as the 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon game on steroids. And what it does is it offers us typically an opportunity to look at social relations among individuals. It gives us an opportunity to look at how those individuals are connected to one another, the strengths of those connections, and hopefully identify some different patterns. And so what we did was we actually took that concept of social network analysis and focused on community-based organizations instead of individuals. As a national policy and advocacy organization, our relationships with community-based organizations across the country are so valuable to the Health Forum, and these are just some pictures of some of the various community-based organizations that we work with across the country and across the Pacific Island jurisdictions. And so what social network analysis offers us the opportunity to do, as you look at the different lines that come onto the slide as I click through, is it helps us to answer four different questions. One is, how dense or dispersed is this Asian American, Native Hawaiian, Pacific Islander network of community-based organizations? What are some of the specific clusters of relationships that might exist? Are there particular organizations that serve as critical hubs to bridge various relationships across the network? And then, who's at the core of the network and who's at the periphery? So let me get into some of the methods that we used. For us, this work stretched just over a year, starting in April 2013 and concluding in May 2014. We used snowball-driven sampling with a core group of 47 organizations that represented community-based organizations that the Health Forum had either previously funded, provided mini-grants or grants to, or had provided training and technical assistance in an in-depth and meaningful way over our 30-year existence. Our respondents in those surveys provided basic organizational demographic information, things like how big is their budget, who are the target audiences they typically serve, and then they also indicated names of organizations that they partnered with and the strengths of their relationships with those partners, using this four-point scale that ranged from the weak partnership side or limited partnership side with no interaction, to networking, to our cooperation, and then to full-blown collaboration. We did two waves of the surveys that reached a total of 598 organizations that we outreached to. Ultimately, about half of those respondents, of those organizations that we outreached to, responded to the survey in full. And as they were naming different organizations that they partnered with, there were a total of almost 1,500 organizations that were included in our social network analysis. So let's get to some of the interesting key findings. So oftentimes when you see social network analysis presented graphically, it looks like this spider web. And so this graphic represents the first wave of surveys that we conducted with that core group of 47 organizations. The white dot that you see at the center represents my organization, the Asian and Pacific Islander American Health Forum. And the dots in red represent the 47 organizations that we partnered with. The lines that you see in between all those dots represent the connections between the organization, and I don't know if any of you are really good at counting quickly, but there's 747 relationships represented in this slide. Of these 747 relationships, when you divide that by 47 organizations, it means that our partner organizations are fairly well connected, each of them having on average about 22 or 23 relationships across the network. A little bit of data from our demographic portion of the survey. And so these demographics are not for the full 1,500. We didn't ask for demographics for the full 1,500, but for the 256 or so that responded to the survey. And so what was interesting to note is that we had partners across 34 states and the six U.S. Pacific Island jurisdictions of American Samoa, Commonwealth of the Northern Mariana Islands, Federated States of Micronesia, Guam, Republic of the Marshall Islands, and Republic of Palau. The size of the yellow dot in the circle indicates the number of NHPI organizations or NHPI-serving organizations within that state. And then the color of the state represents the size of the NHPI population within that state. The majority of our respondents or organizations identified in the survey were actually nonprofit organizations, about 70% of them. And of that 70%, most of those nonprofit partners, as you see from the slide, were locally focused. There was a range of focus from local to statewide to regional, national, and a small sliver of international focused organizations. We're talking about fairly small organizations here. The majority of our respondents had under $500,000 budgets. Actually, one third, as you see from the slide, have budgets of less than $100,000. But we also have some organizations that are fairly significantly huge with over $3 million budgets, many of those being organizations that were more established. Some are community health centers, in some cases FQHCs. And then the majority of our partners actually serve multiple Asian American, Native Hawaiian, Pacific Islander ethnic communities, but I think it's important to note that there is a diversity among there and that some of the organizations have a sole focus on a specific ethnic community. There were some groups that serve not just Asian American, Native Hawaiian, Pacific Islander communities, but other races, and then there were some that serve multiracial communities. So this is another graphical representation of a full 1,500. So I think there's 1,500 dots on that slide. What this slide represents in the colored dots is among the core 256 partners, where in the US they're located. And what we found interesting about this slide, and it's a little hard to see given the scale of the slide, is that among the colored dots, it wasn't necessarily that all the blue dots, the organizations in the South, were clustered together and only had relationships with other organizations in the South. But in fact, where we saw almost a bifurcation is that there was a geographic concentration in terms of how organizations were relationshiped with one another, but there was also a topical and a program focus where these organizations in turn networked with other organizations in other part of the country based on common interests. What this slide represents is a little bit of a different take in that the size of the red dot is the number of connections that community-based organization had. And so what we were trying to identify here are what are some of those hubs or some of those bridge organizations that exist within our network. And it's important to say that in both this and the previous slide, this is a graphical representation, but you can't overlay a US map on it, so it's not a geographical map. But the proximity to the center of the map shows how much closer relationship that organization is. The further out, the less relationship they are. And the way that you derive these maps is essentially by plugging the survey information into a computer software program. And what we found is that there were some groups that are really huge dots. I think the biggest dot in the middle there is actually my organization, the Health Forum. But those other dots represent some organizations that have been around the block and back for a while as well, so organizations that have actually been around longer than the Health Forum. And so that's important for us as a national organization as we think about how we support a national network. What was also important to see, though, is that there are a couple of red dots that are on the periphery of the circle. And so, for example, one of those dots actually represents a community-based organization in Guam, where they may not necessarily have strong relationships with other community-based organizations across the U.S., but they have a whole lot of relationships within Guam. And without that red dot from that community-based organization, we as a national organization would not be connected to that diversity of organizations in Guam. So it really gave us food for thought in terms of thinking about where we need to focus our attention. A couple of key findings. First, from the top bullet point, I want to point out is that as we think about our different community-based organization partners, it wasn't just the older organizations were networked with other older organizations, but we also saw newer organizations, less established organizations, developing relationships with longer-term, longer-established organizations. And for us, that gives us ideas about how do we support organization-to-organization mentorship between those organizations. For this crowd, I think an important point is that about 10% of the organizations identified in the social network analysis were actually research institutions. And so on a local level, research institutions potentially play an important relationship role for us in the Asian American, Native Hawaiian, Pacific Islander community. And then what we also saw is that for those organizations that were multi-ethnic organizations, they played a key bridging role to those organizations that were ethnic specific. So for example, if there's a Pan-Asian organization in Chicago, they provided very valuable relationships to perhaps a Vietnamese-only serving or a Filipino-serving or a Chinese-serving-only organization. What was also interesting to note, though, was who were the organizations that were not represented among the partners identified by our partners. And that one of the ones that sticks out the most to me is the federal government. So while local and state health departments were among, very well represented, actually, I think close to 8%, 9% as well of the partners identified, federal partner agencies were not very, very well represented in our survey. Also, community-based organizations that serve other racial ethnic groups were not well represented in our sample. And then finally, businesses, corporate partners were not well represented. And so for us as a national organization, that also gives us food for thought in terms of who we need to work with our ANHPI partners to make sure are part of the mix, especially at this notion of public and private partnerships, multi-sector partnerships, collective impact. It takes a village, it takes a diverse village to build health equity, not only for Asian American, Native Hawaiian, Pacific Islander communities, but across all racial ethnic communities. And so what I want to leave with you with is just a couple of next steps that we've identified. From that top bullet point, we're looking at, again, that opportunity to diversify the types of partners, the number of partners who have an interest in doing Asian American, Native Hawaiian, Pacific Islander health equity work. From that second bullet point, we're thinking of ways to bring together folks both at a local geographic level as across geographies and region. Third is something that I think is unique to the Asian American, Native Hawaiian, Pacific Islander community. When you look at the African American community, when you look at the Latino community, I think both of these communities have the benefit of having a broad social justice, civil justice organization such as the National Council of La Raza, the Urban League, the National Council, the NAACP. But in the Asian American, Native Hawaiian, Pacific Islander community, we actually don't have a singular national civic organization. And so in the history of our communities, there have been separate national groups that have developed like us that focus on health. There are other groups that focus on housing. There are other groups that focus on education. There are other groups that focus on immigration and civil justice. And we know from the continuing talk about social determinants of health that all of those pieces fit together to inform public health and health care. And so for us as a national organization focused on health, it potentially has implications for us because the local partners that we rely on for our health advocacy and health policy work are the exact same local partners that our other national partners in other areas focus on. And so we've definitely heard feedback from our local partners. Why are you doing a training or doing a conference this week when we just had one from this other national partner? And so for us, it does represent a need to potentially collaborate more succinctly and more consistently with other national partners. And then finally, this last piece I think is equally important is when we look at this national health equity network, it's important for us as a national policy and advocacy organization to be informing the political climate, to giving our read to our local partners of what the current iteration of who's in the White House and who's in Congress potentially offers us in terms of opportunities and challenges in terms of advancing health equity. But what's also important is for our local partners, because they are focused oftentimes at the local or state level, to be telling us what are the issues, what are the stories, what's the data that is bubbling up from a local level that can actually inform some of the national dialogue. So I want to end by acknowledging our funder for our work, for some of our work, but particularly the funder for the social network analysis, which was the W.K. Kellogg Foundation. Our colleagues at the SPR Associates, who actually did the heavy lifting in terms of the analysis, my colleague at the Health Forum, who played a critical role in sending out multiple emails and phone calls to get folks to respond to the two waves of surveys that we conducted, and most importantly, all of our partner organizations across the U.S. and the U.S. affiliate Pacific Island jurisdictions. So with that, thank you, or in the language of the place where I grew up, thank all y'all. And if you have any questions, we are releasing the formal report from the study later this week. If you'd like a copy of that, just come on by and give me a business card. I'm happy to send that up and follow up for you. Thank you.
Okay, thank you to all of the panelists, and I can entertain questions. Okay, let me ask for
there's somebody over there.
Oh, okay.
I'm from California, and I'm from a really rural region that's on the border. So I'm curious if Yes, we've seen some clear differences in looking at more urban areas such as your Miami and then counties in which there are more rural areas. For instance, the county that's adjacent to Tallahassee, Gaston County, is actually a predominantly rural area. And what we've been able to do is to actually work with them, some of the community colleges in the area, I'm using Gaston as an example, some of the community colleges in the area. Also, we've been able to work with individuals who are, who are interested in online work, so we work with them, the University of West Florida as well. So we really established a good relationship with community colleges that are in the area, and that's worked out very well. We've also established the research enterprises, research projects, where we work with community-based organizations in those areas. Gaston County in particular is an area in which the health disparities was one of the ones at one time that was four times what you would see for infant mortality. And so what we did was we worked with a community-based organization called Mother Care Network. So we established those relationships. The other thing is that Florida A&M University, which is the HBCU in Tallahassee, a lot of the alumni from Florida A&M also live in those areas. So there's connectivity through the alumni as well.
Then I'll ask a question. Evan, in your presentation, you talked about collaborating with many organizations. Have you found the other organizations resistant to sharing their work?
Actually, for the most part, I found that everyone's pretty excited about the work they're doing, and they're very open to sharing, which, of course, they want credit, which is expected. But for the most part, everyone's open. And Lawrence, I look to him, too, because he's part of our organization, and he does a lot of networking, so he may be able to speak to more of that as well.
Okay. And Adrian, you know, you mentioned about the, and because this Congress is on health and all policy. So why do you think so many of the policies related to your research and education efforts were so successful?
Well, I'd like to give, I'd like to say it was because of our education and information dissemination, but I think that there were other, a couple of other windows of opportunity. A lot of the strategies that we had researched were really incremental, small steps to just push the needle a little bit further. None of them had a fiscal note, or if they did, they were very small, and so I think that that made it easier for legislators who didn't see it as controversial. The menu labeling was seen as controversial, and so it didn't go forward. Also, I think it helped that the Senate Health and Welfare Committee chair was the sponsor of these policies that were written. And he really is a well-respected, he's been around for a while, whereas when we worked to educate other policymakers who aren't as well-known and maybe have introduced more controversial policies, they haven't been successful.
Any other questions? I hate to be the moderator and ask all the questions. Okay. Ed, what has your forum done in response to the key findings that you described?
So we're still in the process of really digesting these different findings that we've had from the surveys. But two things that come to mind. One is I'd mentioned that some of our local partners weren't as connected to federal agencies, and part of that is oftentimes they haven't been competitive, unfortunately, the way that various federal RFPs are written, or they didn't feel they had the skills to apply for federal grants. So we've partnered with the White House Initiative on Asian-Pacific Islanders, as well as various regional interagency working groups across the country, to deliver a one-day federal grant writing training. There's only so much that you could cover in one day, but at least we're exposing some of these community-based organizations to some of the tips and tricks that we've learned in our 30 years of existence. The second piece is we've thought a lot about developing learning communities and learning cohorts. So as we have funded various groups of organizations that we were a previous CDC REACH grantee and funded a group of about 15 community-based organizations to do healthy eating, active living, structural interventions. So instead of just thinking about funding those groups, we convene those groups on a regular basis, both face-to-face and by phone, so that there could be opportunities for peer-to-peer networking, peer-to-peer sharing. What ended up happening was that folks had common challenges, and in some cases, some of the organizations had more mature programs and were able to share with the other organizations some of their lessons learned.
Okay, thank you.